Hello and welcome to this edition of the FICcast. This is episode number 270. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this time is the wonderful, beautiful, talented, and sneaky like Sam Fisher, Lee Peel.
I think that was the most adjectives ever for my introduction yet.
I was waiting for when I called you up to hear bring, like you're putting on your night vision or something like that. Do you have night vision goggles?
No.
Oh, come on.
I really love the noise it makes when it turns on the Splinter Cell video game.
Yeah. Or whatever it is. You have to,
Should I invest in some night vision goggles just for the hell of it?
I know you have to do some work, but once things calm down.
I'd be good in them, too. I think that'd be a look that works for me.
No, and the best part is, you can camo up and, get... a paintball gun and then start sneaking around your neighborhood and shooting cars with paintball guns at people you don't like. It's really fun.
Yes, that won't get me in trouble at all. I'm down for this.
No, because it's going to be so dark out and you're going to have night vision goggles. All they're going to see is like Sam Fisher, like Ethan Hunt in the background.
You're going to be 911 calls and be like... This girl in our neighborhood, I don't know what's wrong with her, but she's walking around with night vision goggles and shooting at cars. You've got to send someone immediately.
And she keeps screaming, "Fisher, we're pulling you out. Mission failed." Something like that. Anyways, we're making references to a Splinter Cell game that Lee is enjoying when time is available. So
yes.
But we're here to talk about tons of nutrition stuff. We'll probably hit on some fitness stuff too. We're kind of going to go all over the place. Lots of really cool stuff to talk about, and we're gonna really just kind of see where it takes us. And obviously one of the cool things that we're gonna be talking about is Lee's been like Tony Stark in a cave in Afghanistan,
pretty much
working hard to bring the world of nutrition back to life by using whatever that thing is he puts in his chest. And we're going to be talking about a really cool product that she has that's going to be coming out. And I don't even want to call it a product. It's kind of like...
it's a mission.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like... She's basically just going to be trying to accomplish a mission to clear up so many things. Whenever we get in questions for nutrition or even at the facility and stuff, it just seems there is still so much confusion when it comes to nutrition and there's so much misinformation out there. And being in Japan, I can tell you, you think it's bad in America,
is it bad there?
You can sell the Japanese public anything. When it comes to fitness or nutrition, they'll believe it. The big thing out there right now is the mackerel diet. Eating mackerel is...
Oh, I thought actual mackerel. I thought you was you were saying macro. It's mackerel?
Mackerel, like the fish.
Wow, okay.
And it's the cool thing about being in Japan is that things are super shady. They don't give a shit about copyright information or basically they're
do they have any sort of kind of an FDA kind of approval?
Doesn't look like it.
No.
Because you'll see infomercials on TV all the time for fitness products, things that make no sense. We were watching TV, we throw on I'm staying with Robert Palka, and he throws on TV to watch the news in the morning. It's obviously all in Japanese, and a Shake Weight commercial will pop up, and the Shake Weight is getting huge there right now. They have sumo wrestlers promoting it, and they'll show a sumo wrestler using the Shake Weight, and then it will do that transformation, that video transformation into a white dude with abs.
Wow.
It makes no sense.
That overt, huh?
Yeah, it's like they're not even trying to make it look like a legit thing, and it's selling huge out there. You go to Amazon Japan, and it's one of the top fitness products. There's all these kind of female leg and butt shaping products that are just so gigantic. You can go to the checkout at any convenience store and there'll be books at the checkout saying like lose 4 kilograms in 2 weeks and all this stuff. Like there'll be a new diet plan every week that will pop up there. And it's pretty gross. Pepsi Special too. If you're ever out in Japan, Lee, pick up a bottle of Pepsi Special. It's fat loss Pepsi.
They have that there.
And, you know, again, it's kind of like the good and the bad of being in Japan is you see like all this stuff. It's super crazy. But at the same time, you're like, I can't believe people fall for this stuff.
And this is obviously more in like the urban set. Have you seen a stark difference between like the urban setting and like the rural, like kind of, well, have you even gotten to venture out too much into that area?
Well, I'm staying like an hour and 10 minutes outside of like Tokyo. So like, even if you go outside of Japan, there's really three levels. There's in downtown Tokyo, like, or in the surrounding areas where it's really tall buildings, super, super cramped. Then you can go to like the mid-tier, which is a little bit more open, not as many really tall buildings, but still like tons of 10, 12-story buildings, still super cramped, and there's still convenience stores all over the place. And then you can go to like the countryside, which is rice fields and like swamp-type areas. Think Karate Kid 2, like that kind of stuff. That is kind of like where it's really spread out. But still, all this stuff is available everywhere because convenience stores are like the supermarkets. They're all over the place. And you can like barely – you can't go like 20 feet without tripping over a 7-Eleven or a Family Mart or something like that. And that's, to be honest, one of my favorite parts about being in Japan is I can always get cans of coffee and green tea. And it's – man, I'm so close to just moving out there. It's really close.
I keep waiting for you to say that you're doing it.
It's one of those things that it's like, yeah, I mean, from this trip, I feel I can totally do it and feel okay. Wow. I'd have to leave the pup behind, but I think he will survive.
Has he been hanging with the folks?
Yeah, he's with my parents. Yeah. So, I mean, he's going to be okay. But anyways, we got tons of cool stuff to cover. We got some questions from the audience. And, you know, we're obviously going to be getting into some of this discussion of the content of the book. So let's get into the first question from Mrs. C. I had a teacher like that.
I had a Miss C.
Yeah, everyone, Miss C or Ms. B. Usually misses with a letter of a name that's a little bit too hard to pronounce. So my question for Lee is, what is the number one reason, in her opinion, that people who know everything there is to know and a lot more about the fat loss, health, and exercise from blogs and books, they still spend years and years dieting yet get zero results? What's the biggest common reason for that?
Well, I was going to give your opinion, but I'm going to go with mine. And I love this question because I think that it hits upon a very interesting point, which is there's two reasons that I think that this happens on the majority of the level, or general level. I think the first reason is overinformation. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. In the fitness and health industry, you go to one blog and you're told that calories don't count. You go to another blog and you're told that calories do. You go to one blog and you say, oh, carbohydrates are great. You can totally eat them for fat loss. You go to another, oh, no, you can't keep carbohydrates. So the massive amount of conflicting information that exists within the fitness and health industry, I think, contributes to that to some level, because since fat loss is not a very quick process for the majority of people, and since it takes a lot of time, trust, putting your head down and doing the work and consistency, it's really easy to get frustrated with your lack of results or with things not changing and switch up what you're doing or take a new diet, a new training system, or whatever out for a ride. And you create this system of like a lot of variables and a lot of changes. If you kind of approach things in the aspect of being very meticulous and saying to yourself, I'm going to give X system or X method a try for an extended period of time and see where that gets me, and at least give it a good 3 to 4 months of real definite effort. I think that you would be surprised to find too many people on most things, even stuff that's kind of ridiculous, not working on some level. But I find that the majority of people never get remotely that close. Most people are a few weeks kind of a system, maybe 2-4 tops. And they'll achieve some sort of consistency with the diet or training program that they're doing, or combination of both. And then they'll waver off. Even people that have been in it for a very long time. So there's those people. And then there's the other aspect of things in which that, I'm going to go with three, actually. The second thing is, I think, not understanding the importance of two really incredibly important factors, which is activity monitoring and caloric intake selection. And essentially what that means is you can understand macros, you can understand vitamins, minerals, you can understand every supplement known to man, you can understand every single training program, be it a push, pull, lift, full body, 5x5, it does not matter. You can understand everything, but if you don't have your energy equation down, if you don't understand how much you need to intake and how much you're outputting, and understand what that output is and intake is on any sort of real accurate level, it's not pointless, but whatever goal you're trying to achieve, you're probably shooting yourself in the foot. Be it muscle gain, be it fat loss, it doesn't matter. How many times have we seen people screw up muscle gain because they weren't eating enough and they didn't understand that with all that energy intake increasing and with all that training increasing, that caloric burn has increased and the amount of need for food has increased, and they're just not stuffing their face enough for it. Or the reverse side of things, that people expect that they burn more calories than they actually burn, or they expect that food quantity doesn't have quite as much energy inside of it, and they just don't lose fat until they either remove a little bit more or restrict a little bit less. There are other factors, and certainly factors we'll talk about with the book, but we're talking 99% of the people here, if not more, and most of those people do not get that equation right. And they want to look to everything but that equation. But if you're trying to go for fat loss, if you don't start with that equation, I just think that you're wasting your time. You might get lucky, portion here, a point system there, restrictive diet there, taking these foods out of your diet and all that kind of stuff. But you may land on it. Jackpot works. Great. And if it's effortless for you, even better. I don't hate on that. But I find that the majority of people don't land in that luck. And it's not understanding that energy equation. And the third thing is, which I think is a lot more true once everyone understands everything, is it's just hard. It's just really, 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 really hard. You can know everything. You can understand everything. You can absolutely process every single training method that you can do and know how to get to your goals. But when it comes to restricting food, and when it comes to depriving your body of need, which we don't want to do, we're not physiologically set up to do it. It's complete vanity for at that point, probably for most people, because a general person in that position likely isn't in an obese category or even a largely overweight category. Usually a person in that position is in that kind of a 10 to 25 pounds of body fat range loss needed, somewhere in that kind of zone for most goals. That last little shoot over the line, if you will. And for those people, it's just hard. You have, yes, hormonal processes, and you have physical things that kind of fight against you harder at lower body fat levels, but you also have psychological issues, procrastinations, just not wanting to give up food, period. I'm getting ready. I mean, this is just complete anecdotal, but I am getting ready for the first time in a very long time to go into a cut, and I can't tell you how much I don't want to do it. I couldn't want to do it less. I hate not having food. I'm grumpy. I don't train as well. My brain doesn't work. And it doesn't matter what kind of macro shifts I make. I'm not a drug person, so I'd probably do better if I did take drugs, or at least like pop a ton of like caffeine or something. But it's going to suck. It's going to suck. And I don't want to do it. And I'm not looking forward to it, but it's time for me to go into a cut, and it's time for me to make some serious body composition changes. And I've been lucky enough to avoid it, but it's coming. And so I'm not looking forward to it. And I know that I'm going to need so much accountability and I'm going to need so much help from so many people to get this done because I do not like to not eat food. I love to take every single ounce of food I can get every single day. So it's hard. And to think it's not, you might as well not even, you have to understand how hard this is. You just have to. And it's not a montage. It's not fast. It's not like it is on TV. It's slow. It's every day. It breaks you. It makes you cover the children's ears right now. It makes you, it's bitch.
Whoa! I'm gonna have to cut that out. Come on.
I was giving a warning. You cussed. You said like two things. I was giving a warning.
I didn't say the B word.
So it does that, and all I can say is be prepared for it and have everything in your arsenal. If you understand activity equation, if you understand every other variable that there is to it, and it's just the matter of do, then get everything you can in your arsenal.
So
you're going to need it.
So one of the things that I want to follow up with this is, something that, I've dealt with and working with clients, and it's something that I don't know if there's an answer for it, but there's always seems to be kind of like two sides when it comes to what people want from a nutrition plan. They either want something to be super simple, like you see people who do like the paleo thing because they kind of have like a simple set of rules and then they just eat whatever. And then there's the other people that want, I want specific macronutrient breakdown. I want my calorie count. I want to know, exactly what supplements I should be taking down to the T. But have you found one way that has kind of worked better with clients, or has it just really been like a case by case, or is there some kind of middle ground there?
I do think to a degree it's case by case because, well, let's be perfectly honest. Everyone is incredibly narcissistic, thinks the world revolves around them. I say that myself included. We all think that we're special. We all think that we have different problems or different subset of issues, and all of it is just a big old distraction from the real issue, in which is that you've got to understand energy balance, you've got to train hard, you got to keep your head down, and you got to keep working. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't optimizations and there aren't things that you can do in between there, but that's the big blanket rule. And I think that keeping it simple as possible for people is important. I find that while if you can remove the dogma behind restriction of like paleo diets and things like that, and kind of like the wrong science as far as like what we actually ate back in the day and things like that, if you can remove kind of like the hype behind it and you just look at it from like a simple basic aspect of like the type of foods you eat and what have you, and take away the fear mongering and like all these foods are going to be bad, but if you just look at it in the aspect of like, okay, pick these whole foods and try and eat 10 to 12 times body weight and stuff like that, and go with those methods, it's going to work for a lot of people. If you throw in even more with saying, hey, try to exercise 4 to 5 times a week, it's going to work for a lot of people. I think it's the people that usually find me and the people that I usually end up talking to are the people that the simple stuff didn't work for, portioning your food and doing point systems or whatever's hot for the moment, intermittent fasting, any of those kinds of things. If that kind of stuff, if you keep trying generic stuff, really simplistic generic stuff, and it's not working for you, more than likely you don't move, or at least not as much as you think you do. And you're having a problem with the true aspect of fat loss, which is restriction, be it by accident or on purpose. It doesn't matter. It still needs to happen. So I would say that try the simple as much as possible. I think those kinds of things do work pretty good for the majority of people. But if you find that you're one of those people it's not working for, that's when good old-fashioned metabolic ward studies kick in, and time after time again, detailing intake of food and activity assumption works every single time, as long as you're in a healthy and metabolically fed state. Otherwise, your option is just to keep going lower and lower and lower and lower until you really don't have anything left to give.
And you mentioned like caloric restriction, and that's obviously a necessary beast of this. We've talked a lot in the past about whenever I've tried to like cut and stuff like that, I still like to do what I would consider hardcore conditioning type stuff sometimes. Whether it be lots of sled work or but whatever you want to call it. So circuits, what have you found? Is, again, just to kind of like bring it back up, because it's probably been a year or so since we talked about this. Do you still kind of feel like, you know, getting in some neat every day, and maybe you can explain that briefly, is kind of still the best way to go, instead of when you are cutting, going, you know, balls to the walls in the gym, just keeping it a little bit more simplified and trying to just hold on to what you got?
It's going to be, you know, I think the biggest thing and the most important thing is going to be relative to your situation. I did an interview recently, and I hit on a point or a couple points that I really liked, and I'll try for brevity to kind of touch on them here. But I think the biggest point is understanding where you're at physically, psychologically, and your capabilities in training, your capabilities with restriction and things of that nature. Like for myself, I'll give an anecdote. For myself, I train, I want to eat. Like it does not, I'm hungry and I will eat everything because I train hard. And even not being able to train very hard in the stuff I used to love doing, I mean, my God, I've been like tied to an elliptical these days, which makes me want to shoot myself in the head. But, and not even doing the kind of training that I want to do, I will push it to every level that I can push it. And when I do get back to hugging my sled or doing rope work or whatever, I for my deficit, I'm going to train hard. But I know that if I train to the absolute limit of what I can push myself in fat loss, that it's going to bite me. I know for myself personally, I have to dial it back a little bit. I can still do sled push work, and I can still do battling ropes, and I can still do all kinds of fun metabolic circuits and things like that. But I got to decrease the intensity level of what I'm going, because for me personally, I get so amped up and I get so depleted and shaky that I have to recover on such a level and need so much food for me personally to feel good. Be it psychosomatic or not, it doesn't matter. It's how I feel. You know, I mean, I've tried mixing workout nutritions, pre-workout, post-workout, during workout. I do best when I drink something during my workout, and then I have a nice big meal post-workout. Minimal, very minimal pre-workout nutrition training. As of right now, that is what seems to be the best for me and what I've tried. And I know going into fat loss that I'm going to have to dial back on the intensity a little bit. So let's say if I'm working at like 85%, in those kind of circuits, I dial it back to maybe 65, 70%, never go above 75% kind of tops. Calm down the circuits, go to a more kind of moderate pace, keep it to where I'm having fun and I'm not going crazy out of my mind with like treadmill work or something like that. I'm still challenging myself as far as like, this is a cardio aspect of things, but I'm not pushing it as hard as I could absolutely push it. Taking longer breaks in between those sessions. And I'm basically using those sessions as not a conditioning. This is not GPP. This is not about trying to get my run times faster or really working on my vertical jump or anything like that. This is merely about how can I get a cardio session in that burns some calories. I'm not wanting to kill myself. I'm getting some, you know, some good work done from a caloric expenditure kind of aspect. I'm still keeping up my muscle so I don't have any sort of atrophy take place. But the biggest goal is not getting myself so worked up to a point to where I can't handle it. I have to go home and I have to like chuck down some food. That for me is what it is that I'm trying to do. And then with my lifts, I do the minimal amount of work that I can do in a week in order to keep my muscles good and to not atrophy. And that's it. Like, I'm not trying to set any sort of like crazy PRs. Maybe I'll get better at a lift here, or my form will get better and something will go up, great. But mostly I'm trying to maintain or slightly increase and just keep it on that level. For me, that is what's going to work the best. There are some people who, when they start to do GPP work, or they're really pushing like their cardio circuits or their metabolic circuits or what have you, they really stunt that appetite. They really don't get hungry, be it an upset stomach or really good, insulin response, whatever it is that happens for them, they're fine with it. So if you're one of those individuals, going hard for you may be the better thing to do, especially if you're taking part in like good recovery nutrition and things like that. Be warned that you're going to be more likely down the road to be hit harder with overtraining or over overreaching kind of issues, because really it's relative to nutrition. It's not really the training, but the recovery process is going to get weaker and weaker and weaker for you. So you want to make sure that you're going to implement breaks more. You're going to implement refeed cycles a little bit more and make sure that your recovery is a little top notch. Whereas someone like me, I can get away with probably a little bit of a longer stint of a deficit due to my body fat level and due to the fact that I'm not pushing it so hard that like my recovery level is like just so sore. So it's going to be relative. It is relative, but you've got to listen to yourself and you got to take those notes and not go, yeah, I'm not listening to you, body. I'm going to do what I want to do anyway. Screw you. I don't care what you say. If you don't take those notes and if you don't heed that warning, you're never going to get anywhere and you're going to end up repeating a cycle and shooting yourself in the foot. So you've got to be true to yourself and say, okay, what can I handle? What can I not handle? Try not to get shiny ball syndrome and be like, oh, I want to play. I want to play. I want to go hard. I want to beat myself into the ground today and try and dial it back and think, my goal right now isn't about conditioning. My goal right now isn't about anything other than physically removing stored matter from my body. And that does not come easy. And it needs restriction. There's the only way it's going to happen. It needs deprivation. It's the only way it's going to happen. Technically, I have to go into a place in which that my body thinks that food is not available for it anymore. So kind of not the best time for most people to really press things into like a new level. So, you know, that's a little bit of anecdote, a little bit of like, it is different and it is relative, but it's really about being honest with yourself. And sometimes you have to play around to see how you respond to things. But if you know how you respond, and you just got to not push it. You got to not push it. I know a lot of people that push it in a weird way to break the diet, to break the deficit, because they go, you know what? Screw it. I'm not going to be patient right now. I'm going to go hard and I'm going to eat when I get home. And it's this weird mind screw that they're giving to themselves. They're like, well, at least I'm training hard. At least I'm pushing hard and I'm conditioning. I've earned my food. It's a weird way to convince yourself to have a non-compliance. And, if you really are focused on your goal, then you've got to be focused on your goal. All aspects of it. You know, it's not just, oh, I'm not going to eat wheat. Like that's not even a game player. That's not even in my consideration of things.
So not to like oversimplify things, but one of the best things I think about all the work that you do and all the stuff that you put out is that you do kind of focus on the psychological aspect of a lot of this stuff. I think a lot of people just say like, oh, well, you know what?
Suck it up.
Tough shit. You know, go do it. Whoa. And you also do like kind of a lot of screening and stuff when you take on new clients and stuff like that. So have you found there's been like any way you can kind of like figure out what's going to be the best setup for them? Or is it just kind of like trial and error? Like you'd be like, oh yeah, you know, from the responses that I got from this person, probably being a little bit more on the more sophisticated side, more exact protocols are going to be better.
Absolutely customized. Okay. Oh, totally. Totally. It's customized. I mean, there's no one size fits all to this. I think I find the majority of speaking that the big make or break moment, especially for the psychological need of getting it done, is accountability and support at the same time. Because you can have accountability, but that doesn't mean you have support. Like, for example, maybe you have accountability as me as like an online coach from like a distance kind of standpoint. But in your household, in your day-to-day life, and everything that surrounds you, mum's the word. Or, you know, it's actually the reverse. You got a lot of stress going on and people around you, like your friend setup system, or you're not very open to those people. You don't share your lives with the people, even if you are close to them, whatever it is. Like, I personally think that for most people to have amazing transformations, you need a full village. You need a village. You need people at the gym. You need like mindset. You need accountability with, not necessarily a trainer or a nutritionist per se, but someone that's helping you keep in check, be it a challenge or support forums or applications, however you want to do it. It doesn't have to cost you money. I don't want to imply that it has to cost you money, but I really think that the number one success for most people is having some sort of level of accountability and having a massive level of support. Vocalizing what you're doing, saying, hey, I need help. I need to make sure that in these dark moments when I want to turn inward, when I have to do this, I am reaching out to everybody And I'm going to ask for help on so many levels because I know I'm going to need it. I know I'm going to need that moment where I don't want to look like an ass, or I'm going to need an extra pep talk. I'm going to get emotional. It's going to be like watching a cartoon animal dies for me someday because that gets me like nothing else. It's just, it's going to suck. So I need a village. Not everyone does, but I need one. And I think most people do. I really do. I think that the people we see online, the trainers with the buff bodies and the guys that can just eat dry protein without giving a damn and just are like, whatever, man, it's food is fuel. I'm not one of those people. I'm like, food is amazing. Give me more. I want more of this amazing, sweet, salty concoction that you've come up with in this life. And I want to live it. And we only live once. And damn, not having my calories today. I'm going to do it. That's me. And I think that's most people. I'm not obsessive like that. So I need a village to help me. And I think that is, if you will, the biggest thing that I find that helps people. But sure, there are some people that do better with, I need such meticulous, I need to be OC, I need a scale, I need everything at my forefront, I need plans, I need secondary plans for which this happens and this bad thing goes down. I need coolers. I need everything like known to man set up for me. And then some people are like, I don't want to think about this very much. Is there like any way I could just like go and eat Subway? And fine, whatever. I'll help you with that too. It does vary. So I think you do have to customize to each situation, but I think to all situations for the most part, it really is that kind of village of support. And then educating them along the way and letting them know how to not fall off the wagon in the future or get screwed by themselves and undo the work that they've done is, I think, crucial to where you don't have just clients. You have people who have changed their lives, and they might still need some accountability here or there. They might have moments where they get a little off track, but you're not going to see these like crazy, like really aggressive rebounds and complete falling off. I mean, that really I find only happens when either A, you don't know how you lost in the first place, or B, there's some real psychological battles going on with the individual that they have to like really come to terms with and deal with. So yeah, but customization, absolutely, but a village even more. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a super quick break. Then we're going to be right back. We're going to be talking about a lot more stuff. We get a huge show lined up. So stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back, and the first thing that I do want to mention is that we're actually going to do a follow-up episode to this as well. So if you have questions that come up after listening to anything that we talk about, make sure that you keep them and submit them, because we're going to be doing a kind of a part two to this after next week. So keep a lookout for that on Facebook and Twitter. But anyways, Lee, you've been working on some crazy stuff. You've been... The best way I can do like relate it is, like I said, that whole Tony Stark thing, just kind of going into hiding, working on the next version of the Iron Man outfit.
I mean, he's sexier than I am. I'm not gonna lie, but that's about it.
Yeah, and the third one was pretty good. I watched that on the plane. Not bad.
I loved it. I loved the third one.
Yeah, I watched it twice, so it wasn't that bad. So the main thing that we're gonna be talking about here is, I mean, the fat loss troubleshoot. Okay, so. It's been how many years since it came out?
I have such a bad concept for time.
Like 3 years, 4 years?
No, it's been at least four.
Okay.
It's been at least four, yeah. Since the original came out, which is, it's not even comparable. The very first one, it's not even comparable to what the, what even the last edition was. But it's gotten even better. Mm-hmm. I will keep this brief. It's majoritively the same. There's probably about a 25% change in the book. It's been completely re-edited, and mm-hmm. the layout's a little different. There is some new additions. A lot of the new additions have to do with my obsession with activity monitors and tracking and little experiments and things like that. So there's some fun stuff in there about that. There have been a few things that I altered and changed based upon just better education and some absolutes that statements that were made and which I removed, because initially when it came out, I believe that there was a few statements in there about some thoughts that I had about like higher normal training for fat loss and stuff like that. So there's been some slight changes to things like that, a little bit more additions to the mythical or kind of tip section, in which that if it doesn't quite fit in the book perfectly, I put it in like a bulk section so that you can see some of my thoughts and topics on those types of things. And then there's a whole new training program that goes with it, which is called the F80 program. It's pretty good. I design all my programs when they're generic like that for the ability to use at home or with limited amount of weight material. It keeps in mind that there are is an upgrade to it, to where if you train at the gym and you want to press a little harder with the weights, there is that option. But the majority of the people, my audience that kind of comes through, a lot of them are trying to figure out how to kind of get the workout in or get the home workout or a dumbbell workout or something like that, travel workouts. And this can really fit for that situation. So there is an upgraded for the advanced trainees for sure, but it gives like a really nice option. It works in cardio stations, which is one of my favorite things to do. So it's a nice little additional program. That's
good for hotels and stuff too. Like this, I mean, so many people have to travel for work and stuff like that, and they don't want to miss the workout. And
yeah. Even if you're not a hardcore home workout person in general, it's really good to look at or have for an idea aspect for if you're on the road or traveling and things like that. So I really like it. I'm really proud of it. And it got trialed by many, many of people. And the results, as always, are a little mixed when you throw in compliance and things like that. But for those who stuck with it and did what it was supposed to do, they had fantastic results. And you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. Not every single program has its 100% compliance happinesses, because people have to stick to not eating food on a certain level. But the training aspect, everyone stuck to fine and loved it a lot. Yeah, the diet aspect is always a little hard for people sometimes. So, but the people that stuck to it and complied and would follow through in what you consider a statistical completion had very fantastic results with it. So I'm really happy with it. And so that's that. Not too many huge changes, but enough to where it requires a fourth edition stamp and a whole new makeover for the book cover and for the page and things like that. So
We got some more questions to go over and stuff like that, but you know, just again talking about the book and things like that. You probably noticed on the podcast, I don't really have many people come on to talk about nutrition. There's very few people that are in the circle that I trust when it comes to talking about this stuff. Lee's obviously one of them. And, you know, when it comes to like intermittent fasting, people always are asking about that. Like, you know, I have Brad Peel on. And, this has the biggest FitCast stamp of approval you could ever get. And obviously, like, you know, Lee's been on hundreds of episodes of the show. So, I mean, that comes along with it as well. And, you know, I'd like to hope that you guys know I got some standards when it comes to promoting stuff. And this is definitely top tier, elite, Call of Duty elite, Pokemon, Mew.
Wow,
I don't know.
I didn't even pay him to say that.
Dominic Toretto levels of greatness. So,
wow, that's something to live up to.
That's reference to off topic stuff. But, I mean, one of the things that I think has been really interesting that you've been talking about is this whole idea of starve mode. And, I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that that might be one of the biggest things you've been writing about these last couple months.
Yeah. Well, the new book is called Starve Mode, but it's in quotations, and I like to make a specific point to that, because it's in quotations and the aspect of being like a little tongue in cheek, a little, what is this about? Not quite, Yeah, I want to make sure, a little controversial, of course, but I want to make sure to clarify in any sort of audio aspect that it's definitely a tongue-in-cheek reference. It's more so, does this exist? What is it? What's this about? The book as a whole, the purpose of the book is about explaining what happens when we diet down and the process and method of resetting any sort of metabolic adaptations that we hit, which... adaptive thermogenesis or metabolic adaptation, starvation mode, air quotes, or air quotes, metabolic damage. All of these people are kind of, they're all talking about similar factors, but I appreciate coming at it from more of a scientific standpoint rather than a hyped word standpoint. And I fully caveat the statement by saying that I've used terms like that in the past. I would not use them now. It's more of a semantics issue than it is anything else. And because it creates confusion, and I like to keep clarity as much as possible because there's enough confusion. But the basic principle of the book is it's broken down into sections of explaining kind of what your metabolic behavior is, some ideas about critical thinking and understanding research. I think that that's actually really important. There's a lot of stuff that talks about monitoring activity level, how we actually burn calories, what actually goes in place whenever we're talking about increasing metabolic advantage or having any sort of increase in things like thermic effect of food or NEPA, NEAT, things like that. Is there any sort of stance or pliability to theories like caloric restriction for longevity? Do we decrease in metabolic rate with age? If we do, what can we do about it? What happens with when we start refeeding again, if we've been going into deficits for too long, or if we've hit quote unquote like starvation mode, or if we've achieved a metabolic damage stage, which really is just an adaptive state to dieting down, which has to take place, but sometimes people take it to an extreme. How do we get there? What happens when we get there? How do we get out of it? And a system for getting out of it for those who need handholding. And so in a nutshell, that's kind of the book. It's a big nutshell, but that is the nutshell. And I really, it's a little bit similar to what was taking place when I wrote the original book, Metabolic Prepare Manual. The reason that I changed the title and I changed the direction of the book a little bit is, one, I didn't like what the title implied. While yes, Metabolic Repair Manual does kind of put into your face the aspect that you're going to hopefully recoup a more optimal metabolic rate than you had before, and that is the goal of this book as well, I didn't like the implication of damage or of broken or things like that, because I've found that it's a lot more complicated than that. And also, it's a delicate topic and it's a delicate situation. And I believe that choosing your words carefully is important. So that was one of the reasons, or the biggest reason, for the alteration in the title. And so with that being the case, a lot of the material changed as well. It's not even comparable to the last book. It's night and day. It's just a completely different book. There is some similar topics, obviously, that are still going to be talked about. And I made a couple nods to previous title chapters or what have you, just for classic readers. But other than like some chapter titles and maybe literally 10-15% of the book has some kind of old classic stuff in there, the rest of it is completely brand new. The protocol or a resetting template is completely brand new. And on a completely different kind of structure and system. So I am incredibly proud of it. I have never worked so hard on something. There's technically, I listed 274, I believe, references in the book, but there was way more than that. Those are just the ones that I listed. And I tried to keep it to bulk sources as much as possible with actual books reference rather than just the studies that were in the books to keep it simplistic. But yeah, I'm super proud of it. And I don't think that you can go away from it, at least not feeling more informed about how your metabolic system works or how your metabolism works. And there's completely no hype. There's no absolute statements. It's objective. I stay away from being like, oh, if you eat this food, you're going to have a damaged metabolism. Or if you do this exercise, your metabolism is going to damage. Or you have to eat at this pace in order to have a good metabolism or for this long. Because there isn't absolutes. It doesn't exist that way. To talk in that manner is to talk incorrectly. So it gives you the best of what we know from research. It gives you the best of what I know from my anecdotal experience. And hopefully it gives you some hand holding and something to make you feel a little bit saner while you're going through the process, if you're an individual that needs to go through the process of resetting your metabolic health, for a manner of speaking.
I judge every nutrition program based on how soon I can have some pancakes. So I need to ask you about refeeds. And let's be real. If people are out fantastic. There and you don't like pancakes, you might as well just like...
get out of here.
Forget about this whole nutrition thing because you don't even know what the hell you're doing. But pancake on the subject of pancakes.
And that's an incredibly... we really need to dive deep into that.
Yeah, absolutely. No, let's... I mean, we'll talk about favorite locations and things like that. But sure. I wanted to ask you about... like refeeds and stuff like that, because again, when people kind of look at, no, but seriously, people look at programs, they're like, all right, I'm going to be doing all this dieting. You know, when can I start, you know, eating some food again? Is there an opportunity for that?
Yeah. Well, the book explains the technical point of how we lose body fat and how we achieve that process. And in achieving that process, there is restriction. I believe that pancakes, by the way, can exist within that restrictive process. But if you want to eat more of them, the bulk of the book and kind of the meaning of the book is to help people when they need to reset or refeed from a decreased metabolic state. When we go into a metabolic state, to keep it short, we have a downgrade of optimal metabolic rate for various reasons. There's some that are just, if you will, causation or happenstance based upon the events and the variables, meaning you're eating less food, your literal, your TEF goes down, your thermic effect of food is going to change. There's certain alterations that are going to happen in hormones that have to take place in order for you to lose fat that protect muscle. There's all these hormones set in the place that really need to lower, drop, or rise in order to take care of you during this time. So to say, again, to go to the damage aspect of things, or to say that it's bad, is a very it's a large misunderstanding of the situation or odd interpretation, because really it's just an adaptation that takes place. It's just an alteration. So the alterations that take place or what have you, they're going to keep altering and they're going to keep lowering. For example, we have alterations in leptin that take place on a pretty dramatic level within the first week of extensive restriction. It doesn't alter too much after that point from a certain baseline. It does keep going down. And it'll keep going down for a period of time until it hits either a stabilization mark because your weight is stabilized, or if you keep dieting down and it gets lower and lower and lower and lower. Most people will find that they'll have some sort of kind of like plateau or stabilization, or they'll eat again because they get hungry and offset the principle. They'll refeed and then they rinse repeat. A lot of people do this with yo-yo dieting, extreme restriction, extreme binging, extreme restriction, extreme binging, or overfeeding. They end up leading them to a point of gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight, and kind of landing at a baseline or higher than they even were, because a lot of people assume that the weight they lose right off the bat is actual fat when it's usually not. So that's a poor way of refeeding. It's a poor way of looking at resetting your metabolic health, although to some degree it can be a benefit, because at least you're not under eating for an extended period of time. It's not scheduled. It's not for purpose. It's sporadic and usually tied to emotional desires and physical out of control like behaviors. So instead, the better thing to do is to figure out the system or the protocol in which that the length of time you can go for without having to need to refeed. For some people, they need to cycle weekly. Other people, they can get away for it just doing like a monthly cycle thrown in of on and off. I just like to look at fat loss in rounds. I think it's just the easiest way of looking at it like that. You have your on period, if you will, of being in a deficit and knocking out the fat loss as much as you need to, going into deficit states. And then you have your kind of off stages, in which that the goal is to completely go back to baseline, get your metabolic rate up to an optimal state by refeeding, trying to hit your maintenance, and then diving back into the deficit. It's funny, so many people misunderstand that the cycles need to happen in that manner. They think and they hear, even my I just got a comment from the starvation mode post that I put up. They're like, oh, well, when... So I don't have to eat in a deficit to lose fat. I didn't say that. What I'm saying is that in order to achieve a peak metabolic rate, you're going to have to eat for your metabolic potential. And what that is based upon whatever it is you expend. So in a day, if you expend roughly 2,200 calories or 2,500 calories or whatever, you need to eat for that expenditure. It's not static. It's going to change all the time. So if you don't understand what that expenditure is, you need to figure it out, which is why I talk a lot about calculation formulas or activity monitors and things like that to try and understand where you're kind of at. They're estimates. They're not to be taken as gospel, but they're a good starting place. So understanding where that's at and understanding what your rough maintenance is going to be, that's what you need to eat when you refeed. And it needs to be for your current position, your current body fat level, your current expenditure level, BMR, and things like that, not where you started from. If hopefully you've had some good fat loss success, then you would have to make slight adjustments. So you need to eat at that level. How fast or how soon you eat at that level from a general standpoint, we're talking about just like the general healthy population, is really going to vary and depend upon how much body fat you have or how long you can go, things like that. There are variables to those situations, but even the post that I put up online, and you can Google Leap Hill Starvation Mode to get to the post, I put up a little chart. And the simplistic version of it is you need to break 5 to 7 days for every 3 weeks of dieting down. This is an overly simplistic generalization version, but that's what diet books are. Customization comes in when people want to get their hands on you and go to a different level. But it's a good general estimation. There are some that go by the body fat levels. I don't like that entirely too much, simply because a lot of people have no idea what their body fat level is or how to read it, how to tell the difference between water, fat, et cetera. So I think time is for most people a better method of using, and more for a generic term. I kind of argued with myself whether or not I was going to go with time or body fat level. I chose time. So, but yeah, so for example, 1 to 5 days, you would either cycle throughout the time, or 15 days, I mean, you would cycle throughout the time and then have a break period of either cycle or 1 to 3 days. If you went like 15 to 24 days, then you would go 5 to 7 days. And so on and so forth. So if you ended up doing like 80 to 100 days of like straight deficiting, you'd need to break for probably at least 21 days. And this is a conservative estimate. It may need to be longer than that. But that's assuming too that you're not overly restricting like carbohydrates. You're not doing any sort of like crazy macronutrients and things like that. And again, this is a safe kind of generic estimate. It could be a lot higher. It could be a lot lower. This is just research. It's not customization. So you need to look at your individual self, your individual needs, dietitian, doctor, whoever you need to pass it by. But it's at least a good general rule to know that you need to break. And fat loss needs to be synonymous with breaks, because they need to be in rounds like that. So how often you get to refeed, back to the pancakes, however often you really want to, based upon a diet setup you have. But it does need to happen. I think that's the key point. The refeeding needs to take place so that you can avoid hitting what a lot of people will have to use the book for, is a resetting pattern in which that you go for a longer period of refeed and need a period of stabilization.
Yay, we got pancakes. Oh,
yay.
Oh, buy too much stuff in Japan. All right, so, you know, again, we're talking about people who are in my trust and go-to wheelhouse. And one of those guys is absolutely Tom Venuto. And, you know, going through it, you know, being one of the lucky people, I got to take a look at the book before it comes out. And he does the foreword for the book. So I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, what was the deal? How did Tom get involved with the book?
How did I wrangle him into doing something for me?
Yeah.
I love Tom Venuto probably more than I should love the man on any sort of appropriate level. I'm just obsessed with him. I think he's fantastic. He is smart and generous and kind and also just an amazing contribution to the fitness industry. So for whatever reason, I have been lucky enough for him to give me the time of day and to be nice to me. I still don't know why. I don't know what I've done to earn it. But I'll take it. And I was talking to him about the book, and we were talking about stuff, and I put myself out there, and I was like, you know, Tom, look, I would die if you could write the foreword for this book for me. I'd really love it if you can look at it, give me your opinions and thoughts on it, and write the foreword for me. Obviously, if you think that I've delivered on a level that deserves your foreword. And he read the book, and I was literally sitting, like, you know, just teeth chattering, nail biting, waiting for his response from the book. And I got the message, and I'm reading it, and it when I got the message of what he thought about the book, and then when I ended up getting the foreword, it was a big moment for me in my career life, if you will. It was pretty spectacular. It was definitely a moment. I felt like I had achieved something because I respect his work so tremendously, and things that he said about the book, and not just in the foreword, but also to me privately, really meant a lot. So, I asked him about it. He gave it to me, and he put his name behind it and his support behind it. And that's huge. That's risky to do. You have to put faith in that someone's going to not make your name, regret using your name to something. And so I take even more pride in the work because of that, because it's not just my name on the line. It's his, in a manner of speaking, too. And so, I made sure every I is dotted, every T is crossed, everything in there is hopefully as good as it possibly can be. I mean, editors and you name it, it's been just hosed down and shaken off. And I'm just really glad that he's been a part of it, and on any sort of level. And he's given me some great input and some advice on stuff that's in it. And I even rearranged stuff because, he thought that it might be a good idea. Like, that's how serious I take his advice. And I really hope that people respond to it, and not just because it's my book and not because it's my work that I put out there, but because he attached his name to it, and that makes it that much more special to me.
Super cool. Again, I've been digging through the book. I'm kind of on vacation right now, so I'm going through bits and pieces on my iPad, and it is top tier. And again, it's kind of like one of those things where this is a positive thing, but looking at something like Fat Loss Troubleshoot and going from that to this is a huge jump.
It's a jump. Well, it's, the Fat Loss Troubleshoot, and that's a good point.
In terms of, like, presentation, too, as well. That's what I'm saying.
It's a good point, because it not only is, I guess, advanced would be an appropriate term to use. The Fat Loss Troubleshoot is, I'm not saying it's still really important material, and I still think there's advanced material in that book, and I think that it's good to have, but it's night and day. I mean, they're night and day from each other. They're completely different in the aspect of this is a research cited, very study heavy, a lot of detail went into it, a lot of referencing, a lot of testing. It's not light reading. It's not heavy, but it's not quite textbook, but it does have a flow to it. There are anecdotes and stories, but it's not light reading. It is for those people. Like, if you don't understand what a carbohydrate is, you might want to read the Fat Loss Troubleshoot first and kind of get primed for it, because it's definitely advanced material. But that's part of what I'm so proud of, because it's what it should have been in the first place. And I think that I really achieved what I was trying to achieve the first time around, in a whole different way this time around. I achieved it.
Well, I am super happy that, this is done and complete.
Oh, God, no.
You can. No. It's all right. You're just kind of. Lee goes on vacation, the day after it goes up. Yeah. And
never to be seen from again.
Yeah, she's coming to meet up in Japan, and we're going to go to Tokyo drifting and, just kind of like relive the sights of our favorite. And maybe even go see Wolverine. That takes place in Japan, too.
Why not?
All right, so obviously the final thing is that it is available as you listen to this. This episode is going to be released on the day that it is released. So, if you are listening to this, I would be forever in your debt if you go to the show notes and click on the link in there to help support the show. See if we can get those bandwidth and stuff paid for. That would be super cool. But otherwise, what is the kind of what's
URL?
The stuff?
Obviously, really do support the FitCast. and go through to the URL and click through FitCast, because you will support the FitCast via doing that. But if that is not something you can do, then you can go and find it via starvemode.com. That is the name of the book. So starvemode.com. And Fat Loss Troubleshoot is still fatlosstroubleshoot.com. And if you get lost anywhere along the way, you can always go to leaphill.com, which is my blog, home site, what have you, and just click links from the blog. The books are literally on the front page right there, and you can click the links and go to them. So pretty easy to get to. But if you can, yes, please support Kevin.
And the biggest thing that we're going to do is that if 15 people buy the book through the fitcast.com, Lee Peel is going to buy a PlayStation 3 and a copy of Call of Duty Black Ops 2.
It's a bet. I'll do it.
And also to play with Katie's dad, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll do it. Then we're going to host a 1 hour of just Lee Peel and myself and the people who want to join in. We will do a FitCast private room of Call of Duty Black Ops 2 for the PlayStation 3 within like the next month. We'll schedule something and make it happen.
I'll totally do it. Yeah, absolutely. That'd be fun.
Cool. With headset and everything, it'll be full interaction.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the details. The last thing I'm going to say is, you know, don't forget to always subscribe to the FitCast on iTunes. Submit a review if you haven't already. You can check out thefitcast.com. I'm at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. Lee is at twitter.com/LeePeel. And I think that's about it. We have about 20 minutes of off-topic stuff that we're going to be bringing back after the closing music that you can stick around and hear us talk about Fast and Furious 6. We talk about Sam Fisher's sexy stubble and Michael Ironside. So stick around if you want to listen to that. Otherwise, Lee, as always, great to talk to you. I can't wait for the book to get out there and for people out there to start reading it. It is the resource you should have if you are interested in fat loss and body comp and stuff like that. It is the one resource that I'm going to ever recommend. So literally, people, check it out. If there's a book that you're looking for, this is probably going to be it.
You don't get any better than that, do you?
No, and also don't forget to check out Back in My Play. It's a great video game podcast. It's highly ranked on iTunes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
See you guys. Have a great week. Again, stick around if you want some off-topic discussion. Take care. An off-topic segment for this episode. I am tired and in Japan. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Lee Peel. Lee, what's up?
I'm tired too. So we're both kind of on tired psycho mode.
You're working though. You're hard at work, and I'm just
I am. I'm not just working. I'm in like a crazed, like putting out fires, fully off of adrenaline and like caffeine and chocolate. I'm not gonna lie. There's no healthy eating right now.
Oh, it's dark chocolate.
No, it's not
though,
even
right?
Dark. It's just it's just chocolate. It's not even like, I can't even pretend that it's like healthy. I don't even know what people would try and
is
make
it like
it be anyway.
It's not like you go down to the 7-Eleven and pick up some stuff though. It's good, right? It's like,
well, that's true. Okay, well, what these are is, well, you know, I can't have dairy, so I can't have milk chocolate, which is just the saddest thing ever. So it is like technically, I guess, a little bit more heightened healthy chocolate. It doesn't have like
from the Whole Foods or something.
Not that milk is bad. Well, it here we have an Earth Fare. Okay, I mean, we do have Whole Foods. Okay, but
I just love the name for that.
I support local.
Yeah,
because I'm cool like that, and so we have this place called Earth Fare. It's like only in North Carolina. I don't think there's any anywhere else. And I go there and I get my dairy-free, gluten-free, because there's always so much gluten in chocolate. And I sit there with my tea and my little chocolate piece, and I'm like, I'm typing, I'm putting out fires, I'm trying to answer emails and forum posts and Facebook posts and what have you, and also do like HTML coding and write articles, and it's just, I'm crazy right now. I don't even exist on this planet. I haven't slept in I don't know how long.
Awesome. Well, hold on. I'm going to get something for you. Pot. Wait, right there.
Yeah, not going anywhere. Kind of sounds like he's peeing. He just got a coin from Super Mario Brothers.
So
he just did a thing in
Japan. I've been, if people have been following me on, I don't know if I've been posting these on Facebook, but I've basically been spending hundreds, over thousands of dollars on video games and stuff because I'm only going to be out here for a short time. So one of the things that I picked up is these things called, I mean, they're gachapon, but you like your local supermarket, like you go to the checkout, then you see these like machines that take quarters. You turn the knob and you get a thing in a bubble and it comes out. Usually it's shit because they're a quarter. In Japan, these are either like $1 or $2. And at one of the game shops, they had one of these machines, and each in them they had these keychains, and they basically just have big fat buttons with you know, pictures on them, and they make sounds. So here's a couple of them. These might help cheer you up. That's one.
Nice. That was completely off about the Mario Brothers.
Yeah, these are all from the original Super Mario Brothers.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and these are kind of on demand, so you can just keep cranking these. This is another one. So if you're swimming underwater, this is good, you know. You can hammer on that thing really hard. This is the final one. This is what I think you need.
Oh, is that a one-up?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And this is kind of weird because we were talking earlier and you're doing some like hardcore gaming shit. You've been playing like,
well, I've been backlogging really because I had such a, you know, because I had my surgery. Or for those who are listening, I got a softball removed from my abdomen.
Yeah,
it was awesome.
That's like fat loss. That's like just instant. Like I lost, you know, 4 pounds and 3 hours.
I was really hoping for like some serious just out of nowhere body fat loss, you know, just to look sick lean. It didn't happen. I still look bloated and weird. But yeah, so I had that and obviously I can't do any training. I was hoping to get to train today, but I actually can. I have to go back in, but that's a whole new story. But regardless, I had some downtime, and between the work that I was doing, I would throw in a few video games here or there. And so, yeah, I've gone through, oh God, I don't know what I've done, Kevin. I mean, I've played sniper games. I've played Alpha Protocol. I've played, I don't even know. I can't even count all the games that I've like checked out and tried. And some of them I didn't finish and were horrific. I also got like all the Splinter Cells, like not just the ones for like Xbox, but the classic ones for like the first Xbox. Mm-hmm. I got PS ones. I mean,
man,
I've got them all.
So,
and I'm going through them because I'm really excited about the new Splinter Cell. It's probably my favorite game.
It comes out tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Splinter Cell on Tuesday. All right. So why don't you have like a 3DS or a PlayStation Vita?
I know. Holy crap. I've been bullied into the fact that this is something that I need to do. But I keep having these like guilt things though, like, oh, should I spend time doing this? And like I look over at my guitar and I'm like, oh, I need to be doing that. And then I look over at something else and I'm like, oh, I should be doing that. And really it's a lot of inner turmoil. But yeah, I've been really having some fun with those games. So I haven't played a lot of new games. I've played, like, I tried Borderlands. I just really, I wasn't feeling it too much.
It gets like, boring pretty fast.
Yeah, I just, yeah, it was like right off the bat, it was kind of fun, but.
Bioshock Infinite, though, has to be on your list.
I haven't tried that one.
Holy crap. Just like, I'm like not even talking about anything else. That's probably the best thing I played all year.
Okay.
And it's, it actually has a strong female lead in it, which is refreshing to see. And you're a girl. So, and it's a great story. Like, if you ever played Bioshock, it's kind of like the spiritual successor to Bioshock.
I will check that out then.
Because it's called Bioshock Infinite.
I didn't realize there was connection. Now I do.
Yeah, so that's super cool, and I would recommend if you do go Vita or 3DS, I would go for the type of games that you like. I would be all over the PlayStation Vita. It is totally worth the price of admission.
I might just have to jump on board. I already have to apparently buy a PS3 so that I can play, I don't know, a distance Call of Duty zombie killing.
No, you gotta wait 2 months until PlayStation 4 comes out.
You really think I should wait?
What's a Call of Duty Black Ops? What the hell is the new one? Ghost is the new one. And they'll have all that shit in there, and it'll be like the latest of all that stuff for people that like to shoot people and call them, you know, racial and terrible things, racial slurs.
Is there a whole underground argument I'm not aware of?
Oh, yeah. Are you serious? Like, that is, I don't play online games at all because it's like, hey, you're, insert gay slur or racial slur. And like, hey, mom, go make me a grilled cheese sandwich. By the way, all you guys had just killed, you're a bunch of racial slurs and stuff like that.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's, it's the youth culture. You know, it's the people that didn't grow up. We grew up. I had AOL on America Online on when I was like 12, and that's when I started like figuring that stuff out. When people were asking like age, sex, location, like that's when I got all that stuff out of my system. And I think with Xbox Live and all this other stuff now, people just they keep getting in contact with it. They never get away from it, and it just continues to get worse. Like eventually, I got off America Online, and just got like Internet Explorer. And then I had access to the world and information. People already have that, but they like their closed systems of calling people. Like, seriously, it is the worst of the worst of culture, in whether you're playing with Americans or Europeans or whatever.
Wow. No idea. Had no idea. That's fascinating. Well, not surprising, though, I guess.
Yeah. So what else? And you saw Fast 6, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dude. All right. Holy crap.
we have to mention it just a little bit. I had kind of a day when I had went, and I went with like some family friends that I hadn't seen in a while. So I was like, I'm not saying like I was in an emotional spot, but I guess I was a little bit. I was surprised by how emotional I got during a particular scene towards the end when we kind of lost someone. I was very surprised at how like emotional I got And it just, I really loved that movie. I like really loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And then right at the end, when, you know, we find out something in particular that happens, I was practically jumping up and down with excitement.
Okay, for all intents and purposes, this is the end of the segment. If you don't want to hear us talk about spoilers for Fast and Furious 6,
we're gonna
talk about it right now. So I'm gonna give you 10 seconds to turn off your phone or your, you know, your Roxio MP3 player in your computer, whatever you're using to play this. And now we're going to be talking about it. So I'm guessing the emotional scene, like I literally teared up when Giselle jumped off the car.
When she did, like I was, tears were in my eyes. I wasn't quite bawling. Like I kept waiting or wondering. I was like, oh, she can't really be dead. Like that's not, they're not really good at, and I was like, oh my gosh, she's really fucking dead. Like she died for him. That was amazing. And totally spent it all around back into like why he is the way he is when he's in Tokyo, and you just all of a sudden like all these like things come into pass and you're just like, wow, heavy. I was really surprised by not only how good that part was, mm-hmm. but how emotional it made me.
Oh no, for sure. Like you could just like and I get to give total credit to Song Kang, who really kind of brought it, and he's grown a ton in terms of his acting ability over I mean, because you watch him at, I saw him, and I'll be real, like I saw him in Bullet to the Head with Stallone, and he was pretty bad in that. Like I don't even call out actors, and I thought like that was pretty rough. And
the chops have gotten better.
Yeah, for the most part. And I thought he was really good in that. And I would recommend, if you haven't already, start watching the director's commentary for Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, which is 4, and then Fast 5. And to hear kind of the like arc of the Han character and how he was even like brought over from Justin Lin's original movie, Better Off Dead. No, it's not Better Off Dead. It's... oh God, I forget what it's called. But it's like a movie about Asians in high school and stuff like that in California, and it's pretty good. But the, I mean, it's amazing the kind of trip that character took, and to see what happens at the end after the credits, post credits, in Fast 6. To like, I hope you can imagine how conflicted I was. With that scene.
I was sitting there and I was like, maybe he didn't die. Maybe he didn't die. Maybe he didn't die. Maybe something happened. Maybe he got out like right at the last second. I don't know. And I kept thinking that, because I have no idea other than the movies what's really happened. And then when I see that, and I see which it's got to be the brother, right? It's got to be the brother.
Oh, yeah. No, he says, I mean, well... It's mentioned he's Shaw's brother.
Kind of implied,
well, I mean,
right?
On IMDb, and they've said it. Oh, okay. It is absolutely his brother. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, then, God, when that happens, I was just like, oh fuck! Like, I was so excited to see him, so excited to see him be the bad guy, but so disappointed that Han really just really die. He's dead. Like, there's no way around it.
Well, okay, let's
Do you think there's still a way around it?
No, well, here's the deal. Like, the just to set up the scene, like, we, you know, the heroes kind of like get away from the exploding jumbo jet at the end. Like, Vin Diesel basically is like the Incredible Hulk. Like, nothing damages him really. So after like a plane explodes, he comes flying outside of the from the front of the plane, basically just drives through the front of a jet, which like an aircraft carrier.
All of it is completely detached from reality.
Yeah. So anyways, that all happens. We're like, oh, you know, everyone's pretty happy. You know, Giselle just like died, but we're back at the Toretto's house in California, and
Sunday dinner,
just bringing it back to Fast and the Furious. And there's a specific like moment where he's talking to Tyrese and Chris, Ludacris, and they're both like, "Hey, hon, you know, you're really doing this Tokyo thing. Whenever you need us, you just let us know and we'll be there for you. So I'm like, man, this is how they're going to fix it. This is how they're going to get them out of it. All right. So, So I'm like, all right, that's the end of the movie. Let's see what the end scene is. And I'm like, holy shit, we're back in Tokyo. Okay, they're gonna show him being saved. So I'm like watching this scene, and I saw this opening weekend, but it was Sunday morning, like at 11:30. So it was me and three other people in the whole theater, like in a 200 seat, like real, like metropolitan, not, no offense, North Carolina theater. And so I'm like leaning forward, just kind of like, have my hands on my head, like I'm kind of pretty nervous about what's going to happen right now. And they're showing the scene, like it's really well edited to the new scenes with the old stuff.
They seamed that together, did they not?
Yeah, I
beautifully seamed together.
I mean, the bummers and thing that we don't know yet, and it's looking like it's not going to happen, Lucas Black wasn't in any of that. And he was obviously the main character in Tokyo Drift. So, and like, even after that, like, I was so emotionally distraught after seeing this. Like, I don't watch emotional movies because I like to watch movies to have fun. And, like, after this movie, I even, like, went online, like, I need to know, is he back? Is he in the credits? All right, anyways. So they're going through the streets of, like, Shibuya, and, obviously his car gets hit by Jason Statham's car. We don't see it at the time. And then we see Han's car burning. Jason Statham gets out of the car that hit Han and starts walking towards the camera. The camera pans away from Han, so you don't actually see him in the car when the car explodes whatsoever, just like in Tokyo Drift. There is no, like there's no sign, like, all right, he was definitely in the car.
His body fly into the air kind of thing.
Exactly. So, you know, the only thing that we really see is, like, Statham saying, I'm so sorry. I'm working on my Japanese, so my Japanese accents are curling into that. It's like, Dominic Toretto, you don't know me, but I know you, or something like that. And it's like, basically hangs up the phone and drops Dominic's. For some reason, he had his cross.
Yeah, he had the necklace.
Which kind of makes no sense, unless he went back to Shaw's hideout and picked it up there, because that's where it was.
Yeah.
And then it's like end credits, but like I said, we never see Han actually die in the car. Like, I'm still holding out hope that Tyrese and Ludacris.
I'm not going to lie. It's so seemingly unfathomable, but I'm right there with you. I'm still hoping that there's some sort of explanation, or the dude lived in like some sort of way, because I wanted him to be alive so bad. And I was so excited. Mm-hmm. I hit my friend's brother. I hit him.
Yeah.
When I saw Han like in the car, and I'm like, he's going to live. He's going to live. Like, I'm so excited.
They're going to explain it all.
Oh, man. That was really sad. I'm so confused on how I feel right now.
The best part is, like, I was able to explain to people at work, like, people who didn't get that Tokyo Drift is the latest in the timeline. Like, I was trying to explain that when this movie was coming out. Like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't get how when he's in 4, like, he survived Tokyo Drift, obviously, because he's in the 4th movie. I'm like, did you pay attention at all to the 4th movie? Do you care at all about this franchise? Don't even talk about it. It's like the people that talk about, like,
don't talk to me.
No, I feel like it's the people who like watched Lord of the Rings but didn't read the books or something like that. I mean, like, those kind of crazy people. Like, that's how I feel about the Fast and Furious franchise, to the point where I even bought Too Fast, Too Furious on Blu-ray, like, at that day. I was like, all right, I need to watch more of this stuff. And so, yeah, we'll see. I mean, two things that we're waiting to really hear about. They're going into production very soon. The problem, like, Justin Lin, who's directed ever since Tokyo Drift and has turned this into Universal Studios' highest grossing franchise for the last 3 years, or for the last three movies, every single year it's come out, it has been the highest grossing movie for the whole studio. So they really wanted him back, but they wanted to shoot the sixth and seventh movie within a year of each other. So seven is coming out in July of next year. Like, it's coming out in less than a year. And he was like, yeah, I don't have enough time to do it. So they got the guy who did Saw 1 and 2, and who seems like he's a pretty good director. He just did another crazy, scary movie, which I don't watch. But hopefully we'll get some news about Lucas Black and, you know, Han will be back. I don't know. It will be. It's going to be a really – I mean, think about, like, what it – even in this movie, like, Paul Walker had four lines. He literally said nothing the whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he said nothing.
And his role was, they even got rid of Mia. Like, Mia's like, yeah, Mia's just at home with the kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see where they go. I really am.
All right. So there you go, people. For everyone that wanted off-topic discussion, there's 20 minutes of it. all right. We're going to do a podcast.
I guess we should.